Welcome to Putting It Together, the podcast that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show and song by song. My name is Kyle Marshall, Canadian podcast award winner and a self-described Sondheim expert. Okay, well, so the last, let's just call it couple of weeks have been pretty stressful, I think, on a global scale. And just to rip off that Band-Aid, New York is canceled. Broadway is shut down until at least mid-April. So me being able to go and see the revival of Company is just not going to happen, at least not in the short term. It's just not in the cards. When am I going to see it? I don't know. I don't know how much of this outbreak is going to continue into the summer. There's some people that I read that figure that this is going to go on for months and months, and there's other people who think this is going to be wrapped up by the beginning of June. I don't know. I'm not the expert in this, and I can't foretell the future, at least not until I get that last crystal. Anyways, that's where we're at. That's where my life is at. Bummed, but at the same time, understanding that this is something that the world is coming together with, and there's this beautiful expression of love that you get to see trying to prevent this from spreading as far and wide as it could if we just went about our lives the same way we always do. We are doing this so we do not overwhelm healthcare workers even more than they already are. I'm going to stay at home. I'm going to enjoy listening to some music and making some podcasts, and that's just where we're at for at least the next 10 days. You know, something else that's been on my mind this week is disco, like this Ethel Merman hit. So as something I've been alluding to here in the last little bit, in a few days, I think it's 3 days from when this episode gets posted, you'll be able to stream, listen, download, all the cool things that the kids are talking about. Losing My Mind, a Sondheim disco fever dream. Basically, it is taking over 40 of his songs and over 12 tracks, doing these some mashups, doing just straight covers, but in a disco style. They released here just yesterday, The Miller's Son. And because I could not find a way that I could just insert into the episode, I'm just going to lift my phone up here and push play, and hopefully this works. That for right now. I'm still a little bit caught. I'm going to be very honest with you here. This is either going to turn into like the best thing or the worst thing. I, of course, I'm going to listen to it the very day that it comes out because I need this in my earballs. And that's a gross vision I just have in my mind. To me, not that this happens so much anymore, but there's been like disco versions of so many songs out there. A lot of Broadway songs seem to be like this thing that happened in the 70s, much like a few years ago where it's like every song had to be slowed down by 800%. Like, look how ethereal Baby from Justin Bieber is. I'm like, if you do that to any song, it's basically what happens. So I don't know. It's a thing, I suppose. Anyways, I kind of love that version of the song. Not so much some of the mashups I've heard, because this is actually my issue with most mashups, even mashups of like pop songs, which is they're just grabbing random songs because they might have the same word in them, but they don't really thematically fit together. And for me, it just like whiplashes me all over the place. Like, why are you using this Sweeney Todd song with this A Little Night Music song when they have really no comparison with each other? And oh, there's Follies, I guess. So anyways, that's my quick synopsis of disco. The entire genre of disco. Something that you should know is that this coming Sunday, I believe it's March 22nd, but check your calendars. I'm using a different one than yours. I'll be cold and dead in my grave before I ever recognize Gregor. There's going to be a live stream that I'm going to be doing here this Sunday. I'm loopy, if you haven't noticed, by the way. I haven't been able to leave my house in 3 days. I'm going to live stream this Sunday, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to go for at least an hour, maybe a couple hours. I'm trying to see if I can figure out how to bring guests onto the show and do that live. I'm trying to figure this all out behind the scenes. So that is the plan. It is going to be available on the YouTube channel that this podcast has. If you don't know, at the very beginning of this company season, I started releasing the episodes up onto YouTube. Eventually, the older episodes will be there too. Right now, it's just company. So you can go subscribe over there if you want to, or you can wait for me to post a link on any of my social media on the weekend for you to click on and join me live as we celebrate Sondheim's 90th birthday this coming Sunday, which is a grand achievement. It's unfortunate that most of his birthday celebrations have had to be closed down, but we have an entire year. At least God, I hope so. We have an entire year here to be able to celebrate the man, to celebrate his music. So we might not be able to do it officially in a big capacity on Sunday, but why not come to my live stream? We'll talk about him, the music, the season, and we'll have a gay old time. And something that has been growing really well over the last month and a half is my Patreon page. If you love this show, if you want to help support me, if you want to make this show completely fan-supported, then you can go over to my Patreon page. It's patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. However, as I always like to say, if it is ever an economic hardship for you to donate, please save your money. But I certainly appreciate those that can. I release some extra audio over there for them each week, and I'm in the beginning stages so that when our Follies season debuts, there'll be a plan in place to have even more content put over there for just those people. Lastly, but certainly not leastly, I know that there are some composers in this audience. I got an email from somebody who has been a writer for many years and is writing a musical, the book and the lyrics to a musical. And so he was wondering if there's anyone who was listening to this show that was possibly looking for a collaborator who could write the music to the stuff that he is writing. I want to put it out there, have no idea what the subject matter is. Do not know if this will be a match made in heaven. I don't presume to know that future either. But if you are interested in maybe meeting up, you can email the show, puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. And with his permission, I will connect the both of you together so that you can take it from there. And then I don't have to be the middleman anymore. However, I think it's time for Plodding Along. Plotting Along is the part of the show where I describe to you what's happening in the plot. So after this dream ballet of a sex scene happens in TikTok, the next morning, it's April, who's getting up and getting dressed to go to her job. And Bobby, you know, Robert, begins the song Barcelona, asking her where she's going. He doesn't seem to be overly interested in that answer and accidentally convinces her to actually stay. All right. So, I think in these times, it's easy to succumb to the pessimism of our age. When all you hear is bad news, it begins to feel like everything is a disaster, but there are great things being made, and good people helping make the world a better place. For the next 10 days, I'm going to be spending my time creating, but also, I want to celebrate the good. The music of Stephen Sondheim makes me feel, forgive the pun, alive. It can make me laugh, it can make me enthusiastic, and it can make me cry. It's okay to feel. Don't lose to despair when the simple joys are waiting to be experienced. Remember that no one is alone. Let's thank some sponsors, and when I return, we'll be talking about Barcelona with Alex Luber. Putting It Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This week, ATB is one of our sponsors. The ATB Branch for Arts and Culture, also known as The Branch, is a clubhouse, an arts venue. It's also a financial institution for creatives and cultural workers in Alberta. It's this place that's designed for creators, but by creators. It's a place that understands the challenges that artists face, because those that work at The Branch are artists themselves. Members of ATB have access to industry-specific banking services and career development resources designed to help them do their very best work. If you're in Edmonton, it's located in the iconic CKUA building in downtown, and if you're in Calgary, it's located on Stephen Avenue. These spaces defy the expectations of what a financial institution should feel like. Instead, these locations offer a comfortable, unintimidating, and creative financial experience. If you want to find out more, go to atb.com/thebranch. We are also sponsored by Norquest College this week. Let's hear their message now.
Your next career move is right around the corner, and Norquest College is here to help. Our new Career Moves Professional Development Program will help you transition to new job opportunities. Funded by the Future Skills Center, we will provide one-on-one coaching, self-assessments, skill development and training, and up to $2,000 in available tuition credit. Our focus is your success. Make your next move. Apply today at norquest.ca/careermoves.
Where you going?
Barcelona.
Oh,
don't get up.
Alex Luber, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me.
I think we should start where we start all the time here when we have like a new guest that arrives here on the show. Maybe you can just describe who you are and what it is that you do.
Sure. So I'm an aspiring composer lyricist based in New York. I'm 24 years old. I have kind of one foot in the film world and one foot in the theater world, trying to kind of figure out which side I like better. So yeah, and I'm a writer. I try to write screenplays and, you know, trying to get my name out there as a writer of all different kinds of mediums.
Now, when you say like aspiring lyricist, I want to know how you attack songwriting, which is like, what is your biggest inspiration as far as wanting to like write songs?
Sure. Well, I've been writing songs for like a really long time, since like fifth grade. And so I started off obviously like in the more pop rock oriented songwriting style. And then as, you know, I grew into loving theater and Sondheim and things like that, I've, you know, tried my hand at that. And, you know, that's kind of where I've been drawn to recently. So I've been trying to just kind of go by the story and go by as Sondheim says, content dictates form, and, you know, going through that rule and trying to musicalize stories that I find interesting.
Do you think there is any similarities between pop writing and theater writing at all?
I find with the music I write that theater writing is more concrete in a lot of ways. I think that when you listen to a pop lyric, there's a lot of things about mood and tone, and those things obviously exist in theater writing, but I think you can get away with a kind of vaguer, you know, mysterious tone in a rock song or a pop song. You know, you don't have to always be so literal, where in theater, obviously you're constantly just talking about story and character and motivation and drive and things like that.
Now, I know you said that you were getting more into Sondheim as you kind of like switched gears a little bit. How did you fall into Sondheim in the first place?
Yeah, so I think first off, just the Sweeney Todd movie was the first, which I think probably a lot of people say. Yeah, that was the first like inkling of Sondheim. I didn't even know who wrote the music. I just knew, you know, it was like a bloody movie that Tim Burton had done. And I was like, you know, an edgy, you know, ninth or 10th grader or something like that. And yeah, and then eventually as I, you know, grew up and got more involved in theater and had friends doing theater, I would just hear little bits of different shows here, Into the Woods. I remember my friend showing me like Sunday in the Park with George in like 11th grade and being like, wow, this is cool. And just kind of, you know, finding my own way through his whole catalog. And I think, you know, now I've heard every show and I'm like obsessed with everything. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
is there a specific Sondheim show that you would label as your favorite?
So I would usually call it a tie between Company and Assassins.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So what attracts you to those two shows?
It's the format. It's the way that they're real concept pieces that that have these vignettes that weave in and out of each other. And yeah, I think it's really just bold, like really interesting theater.
Because Google knows everything about my life nowadays, I was recommended this video here the other day talking about Assassins, and it was during the, I think it was a 2002 revival that happened with Assassins, because it was originally supposed to come out in 2001.
Yeah.
And it had to be pushed back because of 9/11. But they were talking about how, like, there was literally walkouts happening in that show because, at least in their interpretation, people were just not ready to have the ending song basically turn to you and be like, hey, these assassins, they have a right to be happy too. You know?
Yeah.
So people were just like, none about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the few years post 9/11, I think the actual revival came out 03 or 04. Yeah. I could imagine it was kind of a delicate time, especially like, you know, being in Midtown Manhattan at that time.
I'm curious to know, how is the audience responding to this difficult piece?
It's fascinating because it's a real mixed bag. You see people weeping at times in the audience, and I know that there have been...
And you see people who are offended the night I was there.
Yeah.
I cannot accept a musical.
They walk out.
There have been some walkouts.
Now, what offends them?
We've had now two audience discussions. And we've had about 400 people stay, which is a little unheard of for an audience discussion. I mean, usually you get 50 hardcore academics who want to make a nice point. And these are people who are upset, and they want resolution, and they want us to release something in them. You know, they want us to make it better. So they stay for a discussion. And one woman, you know, she said, you've got all these accolades. And we're like, oh, we know where this is going. All these accolades and wonderful things and... That last song just really makes me angry. And we went, something just broke? Oh no, everybody has the right to be happy.
Right.
That just made her so angry, the idea that these people are coming out making a case that we have a right to be happy. And Mark Kudish, who was at the talkback, gave a brilliant answer. And he just said, you know, we're not making a statement that these people are correct.
Yeah.
We're simply saying this is their point of view, and this point of view exists.
Right.
It certainly exists. You know, it existed pre 9/11.
Before I forget it, this has nothing to do with anything. But one of my favorite memories of that Sweeney Todd that Tim Burton did is sitting in a theater watching that movie, and then realizing how some of the people around me didn't realize they had signed up to watch a musical. Because I don't know how well the trailers really sold the fact that it was.
I don't think they did. I think it looked like a dream sequence that would be like 3 minutes of singing, and then like it would be back to a normal movie.
It's like, no, the whole thing is going to be sung here, people, so get ready.
Yeah.
So company specifically, what I'm always curious about, I have this long time theory that I've mentioned multiple times now in these recordings I've been making for this season. For me, when I first listened to Company, I was a teenager and I liked some of the songs, but I didn't necessarily connect with the show. However, as I got older, I very much started connecting with the show in a very deep level. So I'm wondering, as you is like in their early 20s,
mm-hmm.
Was that the same thing for you, or was this something that was always meaningful for you?
Honestly, it was always pretty meaningful for me, because I remember like watching one of the versions of Company. I think it was the Raul Esparza 2007 mm-hmm. version, and being like, you know, really into it and having no knowledge of marriage or anything like that at 16 right. or 17 years old, you know, and just being really caught by the characters and the way that it was all structured there. So I don't know. I think obviously there's been like added poignancy as, you know, I've gotten older, but I think it was always pretty immediate for me.
The other thing to add on to that, now that we have, I'm going to call it like an updated version. So in 2018, when they redid it over in London, they do set it in current day. So it's, you know, in the 2000s, it's happening then, changing some of the lyrics around. Do you enjoy that fact, or do you think that it should be always a period piece, like set in the 1970s?
Well, I don't know. Part of me is like, you know, nothing should be anything. Like, they've been doing Shakespeare mm-hmm. in every period possible. But then part of me, I just really enjoy the 70s aesthetic, especially being a fan of 70s film. That kind of, you know, 1970s comedy that Company kind of lands in, which is kind of that like Woody Allen style, I think, of like, you know, life in New York City and modern romance and all that stuff. It's kind of careful with Company because it could fall either way. And I think that what I like about the show is partially the 70s aspect of it. But I also think that, yes, like the new updated version easily translates it into the new time period, like, pretty seamlessly.
I also love, like, 70s, 60s films. People will now know when we were recording this episode that they follow me on Twitter. I watched this Lee Marvin movie last night, and I was like, I could not get over him. Like, he looks so old in this. And so I had to look it up, and he was like, oh, he's only 42, and he looks like he's 65 in this movie. And it was just, like, throwing me off so much. But, I mean, when you smoke and drink all day long for, like, 20 years, that's kind of what happens to people.
I think people just look older in 70s movies in general. I think people looked older at their current age than they do now, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I don't know what that is. I'm going to say mostly moisturizer, but I have no idea. Something happened along the way.
It's got to be something.
So, Alex, we're talking about Barcelona today, or I guess if I'm supposed to pronounce it properly, Barcelona is what we're talking about today. This is a song that appears very late in the show, right? It's like this song, The Ladies Who Lunch, and then Being Alive. So we're very much in the home stretch here at this time. And to kind of like spoil it, if people have never heard this before, but that would be weird to be listening to this podcast if you haven't. I mean, this leads up to a joke. Like the whole purpose of this song, in a way, is to have this interesting scene that's going on between a one night stand, and then the button at the very end of this song is being like, oh, all these things I've been saying, I don't know if I actually mean them at all. But I think you had some questions about just the intention of the song in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into it as we go through each lyric, but. Mm-hmm. To me, like, the song ends on, yeah, like you said, this button of a joke with like him saying, oh, God, that she's decided to stay. And to me, just there's so much just darkness and I think sadness in Bobby throughout the song that I question. I've seen the song directed and played for, you know, for laughs, pretty much almost every version of the song that I've seen. But I don't know. I wonder as I go through the lyrics, there's part of me thinks Bobby is just incredibly lonely. And obviously he is, but he wants her to stay, or some part of him wants her to stay.
This is the interesting part, because, I mean, oftentimes Bobby is referred to as this blank slate. He is the cipher in which the audience is, you know, taking in this show. And I think the benefits of that, for me at least, is that I start to like project some of my own life into that character a little bit. But on the flip side, that I think that this is maybe one of those reasons why there's some critics who will say that Bobby's like this coldish character. But I think that what you just said is more correct for my interpretation, which is I think he's actually much more sad than he is anything else. He's looking for something that he doesn't even know what he's looking for. And that's a frustrating place to be in as a person.
Yeah. And I think on the flip side, I would almost characterize April as similar. I don't think either of them very much like each other in general.
Yeah, and she's kind of shown to be a bit of like, for lack of a better word, like a ditzy person throughout the rest of the show anyways.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if there's any real connection between these two other than they apparently find each other attractive. I think that's about as far as this relationship is ever going to go.
Yeah, I feel a similar way. I think that they're obviously together for that one moment and they want to mean more to each other than they actually do, I think, is what I've come to decide about it.
Well, this is how it starts. So they're in bed with each other and April gets up out of bed and she's starting to put back her flight attendant uniform back on. So she has to go back to work. And Robert asks, where are you going? Barcelona. Oh, don't get up. Do you have to? Yes, I have to. Oh, don't get up. Now you're angry. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Put your things down. I mean, flip my page here as I'm reading. See, you're angry. No, I'm not. Yes, you are.
Where are you going?
Barcelona.
No.
Don't get up.
Do you have to?
Yes, I have to.
Oh.
Don't get up. No.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. Put your things down.
See, you're angry.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
Okay, so let's pause there for just a second, because there's a lot of back and forth that's going on between these characters. And if anyone's ever had an argument like this before and knows how frustrated it is, you might sympathize. But it's like one of those things like, oh, you're upset. Like, no, I'm not upset. Like, I have to go and do this thing. So for me, it's like this very natural conversation that these two characters are having, but in song form here in this case. But what jumps out at you here at the beginning of this song?
Yeah, I think it's very conversational, and probably more conversational and less lyrical than most Sondheim songs up to this point. But also, I mean, that the joke right off the bat of where you're going, Barcelona, like that being kind of one of the last places he would expect her to say.
Yeah, like, right. Like usually when you're asking usually when you're asking that question, it's more like, oh, I'm going to work, or like I'm going to the airport. It's not like, oh, I'm going to be in Spain later today. That's where I'm going to. You mentioned how you feel like Bobby is like sad in this moment. Like if he truly doesn't care, why do you think he's even bringing up this conversation in the first place?
That's part of my question, because I feel like maybe this first stanza that we just read, it would almost be understandable that he's, you know, having this conversation, and, you know, it's a nice way to ease the tension as they both leave. But I think as the song continues, he's kind of, you know, protests too much a bit. And is, you know, I don't think he's angry the first time she says, now you're angry. But I think maybe the second time later in the song, he might be a little closer to angry.
Yeah, no, now I'm getting there, because you keep asking me this question over and over again, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what happens as they continue on here, because Robert says, like, no, I'm not. Put your wings down and stay. And April says, I'm leaving. Why? To go to, stay, I have to, fly, I know, to Barcelona. Look, you're a very special girl, not just overnight. No, you're a very special girl, and not because you're bright, not just because you're bright. You're a very special girl, June. And April has to say, April, thank you.
No, I'm not. Put your wings down and stay.
I'm leaving.
Why?
I have to fly,
I know, to Barcelona. Look, you're a very special girl, not just overnight. No, you're a very special girl, not because you're bright. Not just because you're bright. You're just a very special girl, June.
April. Thank you.
So this is probably my favorite portion of the song, but I want to know your interpretations of kind of like this middle-ish section.
It's at odds with what we were saying, because he doesn't know her name. He can't care that much.
Yeah.
But at the same point, I think there's a line, I think it's earlier in the show, where I think Amy says to Robert, you have to want to marry somebody, not just somebody.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think April is kind of not somebody, but she's somebody, you know, to Bobby. And I think that he doesn't so much want a relationship like he does after Ladies Who Lunch and being alive, obviously. I think maybe he just doesn't want to be alone. So I think that even though he doesn't say April's name, calls her June, that there's some part of him that is just, you know, desperate for anyone to be near him.
Yeah. So I don't know if you've ever been in this situation. I don't want to project anything onto you necessarily, but having been in a position like that myself, where it's like, I don't want to be alone. And yet at the same time, this person that a relationship is developing with, I'm realizing, actually, I don't want to be with you either. So it's like this weird mental battle that's in your head is like, am I just like trying to self-sabotage myself? Or is like, no, this is just a relationship that's not working out. You start to like have these doubts in your head because of this advice that you've been getting from friends. It's like, you shouldn't be alone. You're right, I shouldn't be alone. But also, I don't want to be with this person. So how do I reconcile that? I don't know if that's anything that makes sense to you at all.
Yeah, well, I think that part of the mystery here is unlocked by the music, which, even though this conversational lyric, it's a very like flowing kind of melancholy music underneath it. So I think that kind of highlights that dichotomy between what's being said and what's kind of lying underneath there and the subtext of it all.
Well, that's so true, because honestly, going back again to when I was a teenager and listened to this Cass album for the very first time, this song stuck out like a sore thumb to me. It's like, what is going on? Like, it's so different than every other song in the show. I didn't understand the staging of it really at that time. Little access to internet at the time for me, at least. So it wasn't like I could just jump on and figure this out either. So it took a while for me to really even understand what this song was doing or what it was trying to say. And then, of course, once you kind of figure it out or see it staged at least once, it makes a lot more sense about why they're doing it this way.
Yeah, I think even now there's very little written about this song because it falls in between TikTok and Lady Sue Lunch. It's kind of in a very strange place for, I don't know, it's in an important place, I think, which is what makes me think this song is more important than it lets on, is that it's right there in the middle of Bobby's like whole development.
Well, that's the thing, because of this show, it is these like little almost like one act plays that are arranged in not necessarily a random order, but definitely not a sequential order necessarily. I think that there is a lot of room for interpretation of like, when is this actually happening in Bobby's life? When is any of these things really happening in his life, right?
Yeah.
Do they fall one after another, or are these kind of like jumping around in space and time? Because you're right, that line, that great line that Amy has earlier on in the show about somebody versus somebody, when you take a look at this scene, I think you're right. It's like a natural progression from that. So is Bobby thinking about that, or is he thinking about that when Amy tells him later? It's like, oh, I have this relationship that I just was in. Mm-hmm. This makes way more sense. And I think you can go either way, really, if you wanted to. But that's what I really love about the show Company, is that there's all these different layers in this onion that you can kind of unpeel.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's intentionally vague and amorphous in like that really great way.
Now, something I just realized is that I forgot to give credit where credit is due. So let me just do that quickly here in the middle of the episode, which is the people who have actually sung this song here in the past. So the people that I'm using here are from the original Broadway cast. It's Dean Jones and Susan Browning. In the 2006 revival, it's Raul Esparza and Elizabeth Stanley. And in the 2018 revival, it's Rosalie Craig and Richard Fleischman. Now, in that 2018 revival, something we were talking about actually before we hit record, is because they've done the gender swap, they have to change a few of the lyrics here in the show. And the biggest one is that really great line of him thinking that her name is June when it's actually April. So in that version, she calls him Randy, but his name is actually Andy.
Right, you're just a very special guy, Randy.
Andy. Thank you.
So this is such a leading question, because I know the answer to it already, but how do you feel about that lyric change?
Yeah, it doesn't work quite as well. There are other lyric changes I think we discussed that fit well and updated for modern times or updated for the, gender reversals. Yeah, the Randy Andy thing, it kind of flattens the joke, which is that he's mixing up months when he's, referring to April's name.
Yeah, there's an extra layer to the joke that I think is just very lovely. It's like, all I remember is that she's named after a month. To show my age, it's basically like the Seinfeld episode where Jerry remembers that his girlfriend's name rhymes with a part of the female anatomy.
You don't know my name, do you?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
It rhymes with a female body part.
What is it?
Malva? Gipple? Loyola? Oh! Oh! Dolores!
Malva.
Right, so he's like, Malva. So it's kind of the same thing. It's like, oh, I just know that her name is a month. And then he guesses wrong, basically. I've actually been trying to rack my head to try and think of it. Could have there been a better name choice that they could have done with two guys to make it kind of on the same level, which I'm sure the creative team spent a while before they kind of settled on that. So they probably did the same thing. But I really couldn't think of anything. Like, there's nothing really that I could think of that would actually make as much sense as the June and April
or at least
comic.
one that's not a stretch, because I feel like there might be some, but then like no one would be named one of the names, like, ever. It'd be a very strange thing to be called. And then it wouldn't fit also. They have to have that name for Someone Is Waiting as well, I think, right?
Yes, or are that's they right. In? So it has...
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if they mentioned the...
No, she wouldn't be. No, no.
Okay. So I'm not sure if they sing the names at any other point.
No, but what I will say about that, again, this is kind of another layer, I think, to the joke, because to me, some people might say I put too much faith into Sondheim, but I feel like he wouldn't have done this without a very specific point, because he actually breaks one of his rules in this song, because June is a one-syllable word that he makes a two-syllable word in this song, which makes it even worse. So it's like, it's April, and he says, oh, it's June. That's how he actually has to say that to actually fit it into the lyric, which lyrically into our ear is like, oh, that's wrong. That's wrong what he just said there. So anyways, I think that there's a lot of great things about the original.
I haven't recognized that June being two syllables. So I feel like, I don't know, it always occurred to me as just like Bobby saying it so confidently and then being wrong, because he goes up on that with June, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I always took it as he was obviously just so incorrect and didn't know it.
You are so incorrect. Yeah. The other thing I will say about what we just read here too, maybe you can shed some light onto this for me, which is he's singing about how you're a very special girl and not because you're bright. And then he quickly corrects himself, saying, not just because you're bright. Why do you think he corrects himself here in this song?
I think part of it is he's objectifying her in a way and being like, you know, it's not because you're bright. I mean, not just because you're bright.
Because otherwise you can read that as being like he's saying she's dumb. Is that basically how you're reading that?
Yeah, I'm reading it as him saying she's dumb and or saying like, I'm definitely not dating you for your smarts is kind of what he's saying.
Right, right.
And then
right.
He's like, has to go back on that, obviously, because it sounds awful.
Well, the other thing, too, I mean, like, he's yawning through that as well, right?
Yeah.
Which, again, is a very interesting choice for a performer, because you have to sing while actually being very over the top. I'm yawning, like, tired here in bed, which adds to the fact, like, I don't know if you actually mean any of this stuff that you're actually singing.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, because I think for every moment where I'm like, well, Bobby's got to care a little, he says this whole thing, there's also him yawning in the middle of a song, which definitely isn't a great sign of his sincerity.
I would love to know if, like, first night people are like, is that performer yawning in this song? Before I'm realizing it was actually part of the deal. Yeah,
I'm sure some critics said.
Sure, exactly. So she corrects him about being called April, and then they start over again here with Robert saying, what you're thinking, Barcelona, oh. Flight 18, stay a minute, I would like to, so, don't be mean, stay a minute, no I can't, yes you can, no I can't, where are you going, Barcelona, so you said, and Madrid, bon voyage, on a Boeing, good night, you're angry, no, I've got to, right, report to, go, that's not to say that if I had my way, oh well, I guess, okay. What? I'll stay, but... Oh, God.
What you thinking?
Barcelona.
Oh.
Flight 18.
Stay a minute.
I would like to.
So?
Don't be mean.
Stay a minute.
No, I can't.
Yes, you can.
No, I can't.
Where you going?
Barcelona.
So you said.
And Madrid.
Bon voyage.
On a Boeing.
Good night.
You're angry.
No.
I've got to.
Right.
Report to.
Go.
That's not to say. That if I had my way, oh well,
What?
I'll stay.
But.
Oh, God.
So, that's how... once you've actually heard that, you'll understand how it's going with the back and forth there.
Yeah, it sounds like some weird slam poetry with you just...
That's right. You have to actually be snapping while you're listening to me read here, or else you won't really get it. Tell me, what how do you look at the ending of this song?
The very ending, the Oh God?
Yeah, let's talk about that first and work our way backwards. Like, yeah, so the Oh God, right? Because, I mean, that is the punchline to this song.
Yeah. So that's the one line of the song that you can't really take as anything other than Bobby doesn't really care and is just annoyed that he has to, that he convinced her to stay. Because I don't think that there's any other way that to, or there might be other ways, but I've never interpreted it as anything other than the way it seems to be written, which is just he's done with, you know, he is mad at himself for having convinced her.
Yeah, like I guess you could go against how every other interpretation I've seen it be portrayed as. I guess you could try and say, oh, God, in like an enthusiastic way. But I think it's clear through the other lyrics in this is that either A, he's not paying attention because he asks her where she's going like four or five times, which so it really wouldn't make sense for him to be excited about her staying at the end. Like you need to kind of have it be like,
yeah.
Oh, no, like, no, this is not what I wanted. Apparently, sitcoms are on my mind because the only thing, like, what this actually reminds me of, there's a great scene in Arrested Development where Michael, the character Michael, I forget now if it's his girlfriend or not, but she's walking away. He's like, don't. And she, like, turns around, comes back. He's like, no, that was, I was just saying it. Like, he didn't actually want her to come back to him.
Yeah.
And then she has to walk off again. So, Sondheim did it first, though, is basically what I'm trying to say.
Every sitcom chalk it up to Sondheim.
That's right. So yeah, I think that's true. The way that we're interpreting this is obviously him or her, depending on the version, being like, oops, like I actually made a mistake. Like I don't want this person in my life. My actual question leading on from that is, do you believe in your interpretation, do you think that Bobby pursues a relationship with any person that we see in the show? After the show is finished. So once he comes to the ultimate realization after being alive, are any of the people we've seen in the show the person that he's going to spend the rest of his life with?
I don't think so. I think the one person that could be is Kathy, but she's moving away.
Right,
but I think the connection he seems to have with anyone, it seems to be Kathy. But, you know, she's getting married herself. Same thing with, obviously, he has some sort of connection with Amy, but Amy obviously got married. So yeah, I don't think it's anyone. I think it's just he's open to the possibility of love in whatever form.
If we want to look at this in triplets in a way, we have like this lead in of Barcelona of him realizing like, oh no, this is not the person that I want. We then move into the Ladies Who Lunch, where he has kind of his like breakthrough moment or her breakthrough moment of being like, like, what does this get you? Like, what does marriage even get you then? Like, everyone keeps telling me that we need to do this. And then having the final ultimate realization of being like, no, I actually do want somebody in my life. And now I'm truly ready to go on that journey because I understand myself more in being alive. So I feel like there is kind of this progression that you can start to see.
Yeah, and that's the main reason why it's so hard to take this song at face value, because they're musically, I mean, the 2007 revival, there's this like beautiful cello line leading into the last verse. And I just don't picture that line being in a comedic song. Like, right. I think,
yeah,
like I'm thinking about how in A Little Night Music, which I'm sure you'll get to a couple podcasts from now, the Miller's son is sung by a character who's really not that important, but it's the 11 o'clock number. And I'm thinking about that way that
I have to say, I've always found it weird that that is like basically the end song.
Yeah.
Almost of that show. But yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's because it sums up the themes of the show. So I don't think Sondheim is one to put a song this crucial in like the, you know, rise in the action of the show to for it to not really mean anything deeper than what the surface is.
Meanwhile,
It's a wink and a wiggle and a giggle on the grass, and I'll trip the light fandango. A pinch and a diddle in the middle of what passes by. It's a very short road from the pinch and the punch to the paunch and the pouch and the pensions. It's a very short road to the 10,000 lunch and the belch and the grouch and the sigh. In the meanwhile, there are mouths to be...
How about this? Because Sondheim, I think, read in other interviews, is not so high on him rhyming this, but I always thought it was pretty clever. He rhymes going with Boeing. And I think that's really great. But I don't know. Yeah, do you have any say as far as his rhyme choices in this song?
I really like the rhymes. I think that, yeah, Boeing and going never stuck out to me as, I guess it is a little, like, why would she mention the plane brand or like the plane model?
Right.
Is that something you know before you go to the airport? I don't know how
if you were being a flight attendant, you would. Yeah, if you were a flight attendant, you would. But if I was a passenger, like, I don't know. I have no idea.
She's a flight attendant, but right?
Yep. That's what she is.
Yeah, so I guess she would know. But yeah, so I never had any problem with the rhymes. I like the conversational aspect of it and how I think it's not like it doesn't rhyme very often, if I'm correct.
Well, that's the thing about this song, which I find actually the most interesting, is that there is actually a bunch of rhymes, but none of them actually sound like rhymes. Like, it doesn't sound like we're going back and forth and doing these intricate word plays. It's like very natural going back and forth. And there is a rhyme scheme happening, but I think it's kind of hard to pick up on if you're just listening to it. So they don't call attention to themselves like at all.
Which I think is great because of how conversational it all sounds.
Right. Which is something that Sondheim has been proven to do like really, really well. And this is often too one of the things that he gets criticized for, which is like he doesn't have hummable songs or songs that you can easily sing back to. It's like true enough in some cases, but in this case, I think this shows his powers of being like, I'm going to very subtly make this all work, and it's not even going to sound like I'm trying to do it at all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the greatest joys of listening to Sondheim is to find rhymes you didn't find, 40 times ago.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like, how did I miss this for so long?
I'm thinking of Please Hello from Pacific Overtures and how there's so many rhymes just stuck in that song. Like, it's insane.
Well, someone that just it was just pointed out to me in one of the episodes that I released here recently as of this recording. But in Evening Primrose, the television special that Sondheim wrote all the music for, the very first time a character sings, they use three words that if you looked on paper look like they should rhyme, but they don't rhyme.
Wow.
Am I alone? Are they gone? And then there's another word. Now I'm forgetting what it is, but it's alone, gone, and done, maybe. But all three of them, O-N-E, is how they end. And then none of them actually rhyme together. So it's just like a joke that he put in there for himself, probably.
Yeah, he's very into the opposite of rhymes that don't look like they should rhyme, but do rhyme.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like through and you and all that, yeah.
So I guess, Alex, ultimately, I mean, we've been kind of dancing around this, but do you think Bobby does learn something in this song?
I don't think it's conscious. I think that he subconsciously learns that, or not learns, but I think that if we're going by chronologically as the show presents it and all the events follow the previous event, I think it's in the Ladies Who Lunch scene when he says that he's been like really low and really down, I think that he's been depressed post this encounter is my theory, my conspiracy theory.
I like that. Maybe you should start your own podcast about Sondheim conspiracy theories.
Yeah, Sondheim conspiracies. Yeah. He didn't actually write Follies. That's the new one.
Yeah.
Actually, the same person. 20 people.
Yeah, I was going to say, all the people, the same person who wrote all the Shakespeare plays also wrote all of Sondheim's songs. Same person.
They're very old. Yeah. But yeah, so I think that the lesson he learns is that he just is down from this whole thing. My conclusion to the whole song of the wishy-washiness of whether or not Bobby actually cares is kind of that he himself just doesn't know what he wants. And it's that kind of moment of confusion before the inevitable choice he makes to want to spend his life with someone, where he's like kind of through the song trying on all these different hats and different feelings and seeing what feels natural and what doesn't to him.
I think you're right. I think that this song is a lot more melancholy and sad than what you might even interpret when you first listen to it.
Yeah.
This is maybe a bold statement for me to make and maybe a controversial one. I think it's also why, as much as I love the original Broadway cast, I've never been a huge fan of Dean Jones himself. And I don't know, maybe he was a phenomenal actor in his day. I can't speak to that necessarily. But I find that this song is always better when there is someone who is a better actor and can actually act this song out a little bit more, because it kind of requires you to. This cannot be something that I can just passively sing, and for it to really land, you kind of have to be acting through not just like movement and stuff, but the inflection in your voice to really make it land at the very end. So yeah, this is a very actory song, I think.
Yeah. Dean Jones, yeah, he doesn't have the most like naturalistic style, I guess you would say.
Right.
So I think that, yeah, when you look at like Raul Esparza's version of it, or even Neil Patrick Harris, I think there's this like, there is this subtle like vulnerability they bring to it, where even though the song is throwing these, you know, jokes at you, there is this like real underlying sadness. And I think that I've seen versions of the song on, recordings of it that they just are totally played for laughs. And it feels very off to me when that happens, when I see a version of it that's like, every two like seconds the audience is like, you know, doubling over in laughter. Like, it just doesn't feel very truthful to the song to me.
Right. You're trying to make this to be oh my gosh, like a slapstick song, when it really is not meant to be. It doesn't lend itself to be that way, at least. Well, Alex, thank you so much for helping me out with this song. I should ask, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think we should?
I don't think so. Yeah, I think that's it.
Like I said, thank you so much for doing this. Is there a way, if people wanted to, is there an easy way for people to follow what you're doing online?
Sure. Right now, I just have a Twitter, at Alex Luber. I don't tweet very often. I have an Instagram, at Alex Luber. I don't Instagram very often. But yeah, but I'm
This is a recurring thing that happens with the guests here on my show, which is that they do have social media, but they don't use it very often. But
like,
that's fine.
Feel free to follow me. What I can promise is like once a month, you might get a joke that'll like make you exhale air through your nose on the subway or something. Yeah, but
that's great. That's all we can ask for.
So hopefully I'll have project in the next year or so. I'm working on a musical right now that I'm trying to get ready for a reading, hopefully within the next year. So that's pretty exciting. And I'm also in a band.
What kind of band?
Alternative indie rock, I guess I would say. And we're called Horse and Wells. Nice. Like Orson Welles. It's a dumb joke.
I like it.
But yeah, so we're on Spotify and Apple Music and all that. I think it's an ampersand, but I think you should find us either way.
Nice. Now, are you able to reveal even just like basic plot details of the musical that you're writing?
Sure. Yeah, it's in somewhat early stages right now, but it's a musical that uses folk music to tell a story about the opioid crisis.
Oh, okay, great.
So
I'm so intrigued by that right now. Have you heard of this new-ish show called Octet at all?
I'm a huge Dave Malloy fan, so yes. I haven't listened to the recording. I haven't seen it, but
I just downloaded it today, so I haven't had a chance to listen to it. So I don't know. This is going to be me pre-listening to it, but. it sounds like it's using basically like choral music, but to discuss like mental health and stuff. I don't know. That's about as much as someone
told me about
it. Yeah,
it's a lot about like internet addiction and like trolls and message boards and stuff. But he did The Great Comet of 1812, and he's doing a Moby Dick musical that should come out next year. And he's one of my favorites. So
yeah, so I don't just listen to Sondheim, everyone. I do listen to other shows, and I get excited when there's cool things that are afoot. So I'm looking forward to being able to experience some of that stuff here in the future. So thank you so much again, Alex.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. You can send emails to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. Also, you can follow Sondheim Podcast on Twitter or Instagram. And you can support the show on Patreon by going to patreon.com/puttingittogetherpodcast. Putting It Together is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much anywhere you can get podcasts from. Consider subscribing so that you never miss an episode. Next week, we'll be talking about the ladies who lunch, who right now can't go anywhere to have lunch. As always, a big thanks to the great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. For now, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now. I'm trying to gather enough funds so that I can maybe make a trip to New York City to see when the new one arrives in March. So
Yeah, I'm very excited for that. I'm trying to get tickets as well for that.